Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with as much behind-the-scenes Elias Diaz content as you could possibly dream of. This episode will be featuring a very dear friend, a podcast past guest. It is Mr. Daniel Alvarez. I'm Jordan Schusterman. Daniel Alvarez is sitting across from me. Jake is not with us for reasons I will explain later. Daniel, hello.
Hello, Jordan. Thank you for having me back.
Oh my God. obviously, we are always looking for any excuse to have Daniel Alvarez on the podcast. And Elias Diaz hitting a home run to win the All-Star game, essentially the first National League victory since 2012, could not have been a more perfect reason. Even if Jake wasn't here, I might have said, sorry, Jake, get out of the way so I can have Daniel on the podcast to celebrate and talk about this All-Star game. And I got to be honest with you, Daniel, like normally the All-Star game is the finale of the weekend. And some people say that's the whole point of why we're here. This game does not normally mean much to me. I don't particularly care for it. Like, I'm very fortunate to get to be here and to get to cover it and to be around all these great players. But the game itself, once the game begins, I'm not usually watching. But tonight, with this moment and kind of how we had at the end, we could talk about the ending as well, was to me the perfect All-Star game for someone who doesn't have high expectations for it. So first of all, before we get to the obvious stuff with Diaz, like, where are you usually at with All-Star games? And then, you know, what number is this for you? This is my seventh one, so
this
I don't know.
This is my sixth one.
Okay.
First one was down in Miami,
my home. Right, of course.
But it means, you know what? It means a lot because I always waited for the All-Star game and I love the player introductions, the presentation. And I always said in Venezuela, I want to be at an All-Star game once.
Right. And now here you are for the sixth time.
Of course. It's up for me. It's a blessing and it's something that I never take for granted.
Oh, totally. Right. And anyway, being around all these great players, there's nothing quite like it. But again, right, with the game, it's so random, right?
It is.
It's so, because it's especially, you know, as we get to like the MVP, the concept of the All-Star Game MVP, and I just wrote a little bit about this, about Diaz at Fox Sports, and you can read that over there. Like, the All-Star Game MVP is the ultimate random number generator award because it's not a real baseball game, right?
It is not.
No one's throwing more than two innings at the most, usually just one. No one's getting more than two at-bats at the most. And so to win the MVP is essentially a roll of the dice. At the same time, when you go back and look at the history of the award, does happen to be a lot of really famous Hall of Famers and multi-time All-Stars and guys with real actual MVP awards and whatever. But tonight, we had something very special happen.
It was.
And for you in particular, as I call you to everybody else and to your face, the king of Venezuelan baseball, for Mr. Diaz, in a game where he was not the only Venezuelan player.
He was not.
He was not just the least maybe well-known Venezuelan player, but he was arguably the most anonymous player in this game.
In the entire game, basically.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I agree.
And you could say that as someone who's known him for a long time, right? And this is because he's a catcher on the Rockies, right?
I mean, exactly. He was a catcher on the Pirates.
And he was a catcher on the Pirates for a long time, right? Yes. For, you know, 5 years in Pittsburgh and now, in his fourth year with Colorado. But because of the rule that you have to have someone for every team, Diaz has had a career season offensively, and he was invited as the Rockies rep, and I love that, right? Of course, I'm so glad that every fan base has someone here. Always are his numbers as good as William Contreras or, you know, Francisco Alvarez? No, but who cares, right?
Nobody
like
cares.
A lot of those guys, too, are going to get to – they've been to All-Star games before. We'll go to All-Star games in the future. I love this. One of my favorite rules. I do love that you have someone from every team. At the same time, like – these guys sometimes don't even get in the game.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. John Means.
John Means.
4 years ago.
Oh my God.
Right?
John Means. We were going crazy. We were like, John Means was such when the Orioles are horrible.
Exactly.
And John Means is the All-Star. We were so pissed that he didn't get in the game, right? On Jake's behalf. You're so right. That's a great call. I don't know if he was warming up, but I remember just being like, what the fuck?
But he just didn't pitch.
Just didn't pitch, right?
So, and I remember your guy's reaction. I was like,
yeah. Yeah, because I got to see, because Vogelbach pinch hit. And
exactly.
I got that moment. you're so right. But so it's not even a guarantee that you get to come in the game. And yet, for whatever reason, the stars aligned. And here we have, fast forward to the top of the eighth inning, facing Felix Bautista. I truly don't care about the rest of the game. So let's just skip to the top of the game. facing Felix Bautista, who walks into Castellanos, then he pinch hits for Jorge Soler. You're your man, Jorge Soler. So I'm sure you're a little bit torn there,
yeah.
Right? You could have maybe had him pinch it for somebody else, but okay. Here comes Elias Diaz. So before we get to what happens, I want you to set the stage for us about your relationship with Mr. Diaz and how you know him. Because as we said, he is one of the most anonymous player in the game, arguably. But he's not that to you. So tell me about him.
You know, the first time I met Elias in 2018, this is a crazy, crazy, crazy story. That was my first full year on the Marlins beat. And of course, when Venezuelan players go to Lone Depot in Miami, it doesn't matter if it's Marlins or not, I just go and talk to them. And I said, Elias, this happened to me in spring training. I went to talk to Gerrit Cole, and I told him, hey, Gerrit, I'm from Venezuela. But back when Cole was on his first year with the Astros. And Cole said, are you from the Venezuelan government? And I'm like, absolutely not. Why would you care? And
Gerrit Cole said that to
you. Gerrit Cole said that to me. And he said, okay, because I don't want to have an interview with someone that had something to do with the kidnapping on my friend, my mom, of the mom of my friend Elias. Because that happened in February of that year.
Wow, yeah.
And I'm like, Gerrit, I have nothing to do with that.
Can you give a little background about that?
Yeah,
that
story his mother got kidnapped in Venezuela.
Yeah, before in the offseason, before that season.
In the offseason, before spring training, like right before spring training.
Wow. And this is when he's with the Pirates. So this is 2018.
Yes.
By the way, a great season he had there at that point, but for a very, not a good team.
Exactly.
And no one, it was half a season, not full time, so nobody really noticed, right?
Correct. So I said, Gerrit, in fact, my mom was the one who broke the news about the kidnapping. And she was following the case since the beginning, and thankfully, she wasn't hurt, and it had a happy ending for everybody. So then I went to the Pirates clubhouse months later, and I told Elias, like, "Hey, Elias, hi, I'm Daniel. Whatever, this just happened to me with Gerrit Cole," and he was in shock, of course. And from that day on, we just established a good relationship because we talked about everything. And every time he went to Miami, we talked and we had conversations. He started following Alex Arabase. Of course, we post everything about Venezuelan players there. And they like to see their numbers, and their families like to follow what they're doing here in the States or in Venezuela or whatever they are. So that's how our relationship got built up. And yes, that inevitably led to a friendship, as it happened to me with other Venezuelan players, something that also I never take for granted, but it was very special to have it with Elias because he's very close with Cervelli. Cervelli's very close with me. So that's how it started. And yes, I cannot tell you enough how proud I'm, how happy I am for him.
And Diaz, coming up, and part of the reason why guys like him can get to the big leagues is because of their defense, right?
Right.
And he was known coming up with the Pirates. I mean, this is a guy that signed. I mean, his first year in Pro Bowl was 2009 as an 18-year-old.
With a
$20,000 bonus?
Dollar bonus,
right. So he comes. Do you want to tell us a little bit about where he's from in Venezuela?
He's from a little town called El Bajo in Maracaibo. Maracaibo is a big city,
right,
in a big state. Maracaibo is like our Texas. So everything, it's bigger and hotter there. But it's a land of
even better baseball.
Even better baseball, too. Well, Luis Aparicio is from Maracaibo, so our Hall of Famer.
There you
so
go.
Yeah, so many great Venezuelan players came from Maracaibo, and specifically with Elias. Something that I see all the time, every time we post a homer or him caught stealing a player, whatever, people comment, hey, the one from El Bajo.
That's the spot.
Yeah.
And then I assume it seems like he's played in the Winter League a good amount.
Yeah, with Bravos de Margarita. That was the first time I saw him play live. I think it was in my final year living there. And yes, he always looked pretty good.
Oh, yeah. And I'm just looking at like the teams he was on early in his professional career. I'm looking at the 2010 GCL Pirates.
Wow.
We got Gregory Polanco, 18-year-old Gregory Polanco, 21-year-old Starling Marte is on that team. We got 18-year-old Joely Rodriguez, which is amazing. The homie Dovydas Neverauskas is chilling down there. And it was a steady climb for him up through the system, one level at a time, sometimes repeating levels. But like I said, it was his defense, right?
Yes.
And of course, Venezuela has so many fantastic catchers, but if you can catch and you know what the fuck you're doing and you can have a good relationship with your pitchers, that's how you're going to get to the big leagues. And that's how you're going to stick around regardless of how you're hitting.
And that's been the key for him, because it's just his personality. He's just so genuine and such an easy guy to root for. And he's always happy, and he's a prankster like no one else.
Right.
And yes, he's always like that. But obviously, when it's time to go to work, he puts as much effort as anybody in the league.
We always joke, you probably can't be a dickhead if you're a catcher, because you're not going to make it very
you
far.
You can't. Yeah, right? Exactly. You have to know. You got to be some sort of like psychologist.
Or at least certainly to your teammates. Maybe you can be dickhead to the media, whatever. But that is nice. So, but anyway, I set that up to say, here's his moment, this home run that he hits. Okay, so here we go. 2-2 count against Felix Bautista, all right? And Felix Bautista has allowed 3 home runs this season, just 3. 1 to Adam Duvall early when Adam Duvall was God. 1 recently, most recent one, to Mike Ford, who is also currently God.
Currently God, yeah.
And the only other one, but those 2 were off fastballs.
Yeah.
The one in between those was back in May, was a splitter. Do you know who hit that one, Mr. Alvarez?
I don't know. Who was it?
It was Aaron Judge.
Oh, of course. I was waiting for some random dude. It's always Aaron Judge.
Of course. So Aaron Judge hit that happened in May. So that's the last time he allowed a homer on a splitter. But he gives a 2-2 splitter, and Diaz elevates it. And it goes just beyond the left field wall to give the National League a 3-2 victory that they hang on to with dear life, thanks to the most vintage Craig Kimbrell inning we've ever seen. But they hang on. NL wins for the first time since 2012. So now let's fast forward to postgame. So on the field in his postgame, he was clearly getting very emotional for, I think, a lot of the reasons you were just describing. The history with his mother, of course, this is going to be a big moment for anybody. And I want to talk about that in a second. But so talk a little bit about what that moment was for him post-game, and then I understand you got to talk to him too. So tell me a little bit about what you
I mean, and he had family members here. There's an interview in El Extra Base you can watch on Instagram and YouTube as well. Very emotional with his older brother, who was like his dad for him, because his dad passed away.
Okay, wow.
He's the Colombian one, so that's why he played for Team Colombia.
Got it. I was going to say that is the part of the
because
the,
we're
the confusing. Okay, yeah.
Luckily, we're packed in catching.
And he's like, I'm trying to get some playing time.
Playing time. Right. And Omar Lopez told him, like, I can have you on the team,
right,
but as a third catcher.
Third catcher, yeah.
And I want you to play. So if you want to play and want to be the third catcher...
Go play for Colombia.
But
and
if you
want
to play,
right,
go to Colombia. And it's fine, because it's a way to pay a tribute to his late dad.
And it's not like there's no beef, right? He's still playing Venezuelan Winter League, like, clearly, right?
And he has his foundation in Venezuela where he helps kids every single day in Maracaibo, in his little town. So, of course, he loves the country.
Right.
And his catching mask had a Venezuelan flag on the back. So, yeah, of course, he's more Venezuelan than anyway.
Right. So, I imagine you got to talk to him a little bit yesterday at media availability. Like, before we get to that, like, how has he been processing just being an all-star to begin with?
You know, it's crazy. And this is the part I wanted to share with you, because when we talked a couple weeks ago, when he had the moment with Joey Votto in Cincinnati when he came back.
And I was at that game.
Very classy.
So Joey's first game.
To call timeout
to
and
say,
just
hey,
give Joey Votto.
Exactly. Don't worry about the pitch clock. Like, let him have this moment. Right.
So I told him, like, hey, I really like what you did. He's like, he deserves it because he's a legend. And then we were just chit-chatting, and I said, man, the Rocky series in Miami seems pretty far in July, but I have the feeling that I will see you in Seattle in 2 to 3 weeks. And he said, Papi, I don't know. And honestly, I don't think I can make it. So it's just God willing now. But he said, he literally said, I ran out of hope. Like, I don't know. And I said, we should just wait and see what happens. So obviously I got the confirmation that he was invited. He texted me, and then I called him, like FaceTime with him, and he was just so emotional. But when he got the invitation, I was so excited, more for him than for anyone else.
Of course.
In the roster.
Because again, like, we know the reality of this. Like,
yeah.
All the odds are this will be the only time he makes an All-Star game, right? Like, I hope I'm wrong, right?
But yeah, me too, but possibly it was the last time.
For the Arise and the Acuñas, like, they'll be back. We'll see them next year, whatever, year after that. Acuña literally 15 more freaking times,
correct.
Right?
And Elias was like, I just want to go there and enjoy. And then... Yeah.
Just to be here, right?
Yeah, and then when he got invited, I sent him a text like, hey, remember what I told you? It's like, yeah, you called it, but thank God it happened. And
Alvarez first.
And when we saw each other on media availability, he gave me a big hug. We actually talked for 2 minutes before even starting interviewing him, and then we talked to him for 5 more minutes, and then we kept talking, and I had a Dominican reporter like, are you guys done? Like,
he's like, hey, man.
I don't know. Yeah, for sure.
Move it along. Right.
And Elias said like, but he wanted to send a message to the kids from Maracaibo that won the Latin American tournament and are going to Williamsport to the Little League World Series.
Oh my goodness.
To represent Latin America.
Oh my
goodness. It's a Venezuelan team going there, and that's from Elias's town too.
He
loved that, and he was just so happy, and he wanted to send the message like, hey, I want to say this. And now that it happened, when he hit the homer,
now it's
the man of the hour.
Oh my God! Right.
And then of course, post game, had an interview with him, and he sent an interview like, "Hey, you called it weeks ago," and then it was a pretty quick interview because he was obviously in a rush. But very special, and of course he just hugged after that, and it was very, very emotional. I'm still emotional trying to hold it, but man, it's just such a happy moment for him and for me as well.
Have we had a Venezuelan MVP? All-Star Game MVP?
Dave Concepcion back in 82. Oh,
okay, so it has been quite some time.
Also with a go-ahead home run.
David Concepcion. So, oh, there you go. Yeah. Very cool.
So,
okay.
So yeah, he's the second one. And
God.
Look, now, wow. Oof, look at what I just came to my mind. That was in 82.
What a great season, right? We remember that season.
Yeah, of course. So absolutely. Well. I was minus 15.
Yes.
But that was the last time the first time Venezuela had a double play combo at the All-Star game as starters, because it was Manny Trillo at second and Dave Concepcion at short. This year we had Luis Arraez at second and Orlando Arcia at short.
Oh-ho.
And also, Orlando Arcia's first Futures game was in 2015. You know who was a teammate of Orlando that year? Elias Diaz, of course.
In Cincinnati.
So it's, now I'm just thinking about it.
Oh my gosh. The rest of this night, you're just going to be like having all these visions and moments. Yeah. And like, I mean, you clearly already were prepared for this.
I
was. You called this weeks ago.
Basically.
But you didn't call this homer.
No. So, I did not.
So that's the other thing. Was there a little bit of, now I know he's obviously been hitting well this year.
Yeah.
And has had some offensive moments, but like, was there a little bit of like afterwards, or like, does he also realize like the odds of this happening, like like how absurd kind
absurd,
of this is
absurd yeah. But I mean, when I saw it, because this was the other thing, I was in the hallway right outside the NL clubhouse,
right?
Because we were just lined up to get in
talk
to Arraez and of course Elias afterwards, and my mom was next to me, and she's a huge Orioles fan, and when she saw Elias coming up to the plate, she said, "This is the only time in the year I'm going to root against Felix Bautista."
<Felix Fox.
laughs> The only time in the year.
She's like, fuck.
And then it happened, and she was like, "I'm just so happy." And she would probably apologize to Felix.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
It's okay.
I think
Felix will understand.
Like, we'll understand. But yes, I have to give credit to Maddie for that.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I mean, we give credit to your mom in every possible turn. It was so cool. I am so happy for him. I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy. Like, this is just so much better, because the way that I put it, I think, in a good note to end on here before we proceed to the second half of this show, is basically like, Mike Trout winning All-Star Game MVP, which he did in back-to-back years, is impressive because it's like I said, it's a random number generator award. And if you are able to stand out in multiple games where it's that random, that's cool. But it doesn't mean anything. Like, I mean, it means something. It's cool.
It means something, yeah.
But it's like, it's just not even close to the same because so many of the other guys on this list have been collecting hardware their whole careers and before they got it and will after. And for Iglesias to have this moment, it's not just a guy like, for example, like a Brent Rooker, yeah. right? Like, that's cool. There's young guys yeah. that come up. This dude is in his ninth season, right? Or part of his ninth season, right? A 32-year-old veteran, a catcher. This is just not who's supposed to be, you know, racing that trophy. So it was so freaking cool. And I'm so lucky that I am friendly enough with you that I could say, hey, you're doing this podcast, right? Because yeah. it couldn't have been any better. So yeah. I'll let you wrap it up. I mean, again, this is the end of All-Star Week. So I don't know if you wanted to share anything else about your sixth All-Star experience.
Yeah, as I said, it's always special for me. It's always special for us in El Extra Base to be able to provide this connection to our Venezuelan fans because this wasn't televised in Venezuela today. Mm-hmm. And obviously, this is due to the situation down there. It's not that easy. Mm-hmm. But somehow, we were able to show it to many people down there. And that's
yeah, and they'll know what happened tonight.
They'll know what happened, yeah. and I just don't care about anything else, just doing that and be able to give that to our people because that's what I like to do. And it was so special that Elias did what he did. I thank him for that. So yeah, it was pretty special and pretty special for you to have me here. I cannot say thank you enough.
It is my absolute pleasure and honor. It is the year of Daniel Alvarez. I know it's not about you, but for Arise to be hitting 400, the Marlins to be, you know, heading to the postseason, like this is at least like it's
Ronnie
it's,
possibly MVP.
Ronnie MVP. Like, what the hell else do we need?
If only Silvino Bracho.
I was gonna say, you know what this is? This is after Silvino Bracho gives up that homer to Trey Turner. It was like, this is the price you have to pay.
Of course.
He was, you know, sacrificed there.
Just for
so that you could have an unbelievable season for the rest of the year. Maybe we're heading for like a, you know, Jose Azokar, you know, World Series walk-off home run.
Man.
Or something. I was going to say, maybe I know you're friends with all these guys, but like, let's manifest some more positive Venezuelan baseball energy. Like, give me the version, because again, if I told you in March, like, oh my God, what's like the funniest, most random, amazing Venezuelan baseball thing? You'd be like, oh, you know, like a game winning Elias Diaz yeah. home run in the All-Star game. So like, what's another one we want to throw out into the ether? Maybe like a Tyro Estrada six hit game,
but man, it's tough. But I would say, I don't know, Miggy Rowe winning a game in
Here's
the
one.
Postseason for the Dodgers.
That's a cool one. That's a cool one. Yeah. Especially with we love Miggy Rowe, but we know of he's been struggling on offense. But like him hitting a homer would be amazing. Here's one. Ready? I'll throw this one at you. Pablo Lopez, perfect game.
That's perfect. I love it.
Perfect because he
was so close.
He was close. He loves Felix. That would be a way better perfect game than the one we just saw. Like I would take it. They are here actually next week, I believe.
Yes,
you could do it against the Mariners. I'll take it.
The stadium. Yeah, and I, you know what? I know Felix would love it.
Exactly.
Felix was here.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
oh my God. All right. Maybe you get like a Rugi Odor like four homer game. All right. Well, we could go all night. Okay. Daniel, you are the best. Thank you
You're
so
the best.
Much.
I love you guys so much.
I thank you for doing this. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, you will be hearing the second half of the show, which I'm going to set up after this here break. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Jordan.
This is former PGA Tour winner Smiley Kaufman, host of The Smiley Show, a SiriusXM podcast. You want to know what I love about golf? I get to talk to some really cool people. I get to walk the fairways of the best courses in the world with the best players in the world, and I get to share it with you every single week. Listen to The Smiley Show right now on Stitcher, Pandora, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Smiley, S-M-Y-L-I-E.
Hey! And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Thank you again to Daniel Alvarez for joining me for that wonderful conversation about the All-Star Game MVP, Elias Diaz. Hope you guys all enjoyed that. So just a little bit of background. Jake Mintz had to depart early from this game because he had a red eye to go head back home. So we both have kind of a busy week going coming up at the end of this week, post All-Star break. And so we are not going to have a fully live show on Friday. We actually already recorded our show on Friday. But we want to give you more for the show on Wednesday to kind of wrap up the All-Star festivities. And, you know, on Friday, last Friday and Saturday, you got to hear the All-Star game futures, the futures game interviews that we did with a bunch of those players. But there was one that we thought was the absolute best, and we wanted to save it for this week. And so what you're going to hear in the second half of this show is a conversation with Yankees prospect Spencer Jones and Cubs prospect Pete Crow Armstrong, two of the more charismatic and hilarious guys that we had in the futures game this week and this year. And we really wanted to kind of save that conversation for its own. So as a kind of a capper for All-Star Week and just one of the most fun conversations we had since we got here to Seattle, we're going to run this here conversation that Jake and I had with Pete and Spencer. And then I will hop back on at the end and wrap up this episode. So enjoy this conversation with Spencer Jones and PCA. Spencer Jones of the New York Yankees and Pete Crow Armstrong, a repeat guest. Welcome back,
repeat
Mr. PCA.
Armstrong.
Repeat Crow Armstrong is here. Pete, hello. How are you, man? Your hair's longer than the last time we talked to you.
I know. I'm good. My hair's seen better days, but it, you know, it's all part of the process. Is, you know, I haven't grown my hair out in years.
What, so a minor leaguer saying that his hair is taking one day at a time. So the hair might get the headlines, but I think I want to talk about the goatee.
All right, good podcast content, but we are recording video, so this is good. Let's talk.
People who listen to audio know what a goatee looks like. Yeah. Pete,
not this goatee.
Pete, I want you to explain why it's on your face. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I just want you to walk us through the process.
I've gotten a lot of mixed opinions on that as well. You know, you were asking about my style.
Yeah.
And I said it's just kind of confused. Like, you know, I'm just doing things.
Just doing things.
It just, you know, it's a choice that appears in the moment. And okay, it was really long at one point. Like it was full. And like, I finally saw like what color my facial hair is going to be. But, you know.
Wow.
Well, big reveal.
Yeah.
Like, what color is this going to be? This is very shocking.
What are your thoughts on the goatee, Spencer?
I think it looks good. I'm not going to lie. Like, I think it's different, but I mean, it gets the message across, you know.
What's the message?
That's a good question.
I have a goatee
because I haven't seen him in months. So like, this is the first time he's seen me with probably any facial hair ever.
Right.
First time I've seen you in a year.
Has it been a year, really?
Okay, damn. So this is good. What you're hearing now is Spencer Jones being a good friend and thinking about, oh, my friend Pete. That's why they're here together. You guys are friends. You guys have known each other for quite some time. So take us back to the beginning. When did Spencer Jones first meet Pete Crow Armstrong? What was the situation? And tell us about that.
The situation when we first met was Area Code Games.
Okay.
In 2018?
18.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We were the Brewers Code team. Mm-hmm. We weren't the best Area Code team ever assembled, especially out of Southern California.
Okay.
Why are you saying that? Were you losing the 5 Area Code games you were playing? What was the problem?
2 and 3, maybe.
Okay.
Like,
so you weren't horrible.
No,
like,
it wasn't terrible. I mean, had high standards for ourselves.
Yeah. Know,
high expectations.
For a team with 2 futures gamers, maybe 3, probably more. Who else was on that team that's in Pro Ball? Or maybe that was the problem. It was just you two.
No, Joey Estes.
Oh, there you go.
I just faced him.
Brooks Lee was on that team.
Brooks Lee.
Okay, that's a good name.
That's when my eyes were open to Brooks Lee. That was like, okay, that tournament where everybody was kind of like,
which is kind of early. That's before Brooks, way before Brooks Lee goes.
So you guys kind of meet at that moment and you keep in touch throughout high school. How much have you actually played against each other or with each other since you met?
I don't think we've played each other since.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero.
I don't think we've ever played each other together.
If anything, it would have been at like TOS.
I didn't even get invited to TOS.
See, that's crazy. Then never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Spencer, you did go to Vanderbilt. PCA was like, don't need that.
I actually was his host.
Okay. Now we're getting to this because I know that Spencer is a year older than Pete, right? A year older. Yeah. A year apart.
There is no way to figure out if you like someone better than to host them for an official visit.
Okay. Okay. So there I had a feeling this was the connection.
Easier judge of character as someone who has hosted freshmen, or sorry, hosted high school kids as a college baseball player. Like 2 minutes in, you just call a coach, nope or yes, right away. So you don't have to walk us through every beat of the official visit, okay? I don't want an hour by hour breakdown. But what do you remember from that weekend?
I mean, it's pretty simple. They do a really good job with the official visits at Vanderbilt. Like, you know, the families are there too. So
okay.
The players on the team are usually linked up with a recruit, right? Usually guys from similar areas, similar positions, that kind of thing. And Pete had played with one of my teammates at his high school, Sam Leboki,
who was
at Vanderbilt with me for a while. And so I don't think Sam had a recruit.
No, he just tagged along with us. Seriously.
He's like, I know Pete.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So we did like go-karts, mini golf, that kind of thing.
Nice.
And then
so humble and like just very pure.
Extremely wholesome.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hope you're telling the truth. I do believe you. You guys are good, upstanding individuals.
So here's
at Vanderbilt, especially.
Yeah.
You failed.
He went.
You failed.
What do you mean?
He didn't go. He's
too good. Yeah, Pete had a terrible time. That's why he signed in the first round.
He's out of high school. You fucked up.
You blew it, man.
All right. What could Spencer have done?
Right. No.
What could Spencer have done?
Hold on.
Besides, I guess, like, hand you $3 million. Like, what could he have done?
That's a pretty good hypothetical. I mean, like, yeah.
That's probably going to got it done.
Like, what could Spencer Jones have done to keep Pete and Robert Hassel from saying
now,
yes
again,
to
though, but this also brings up a hypothetical that we've talked about, Pete, I believe, which is they had a pretty good center fielder.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, I mean, now Pete is as good as it gets in center field, and yet Enrique Bradfield Jr. is probably one of like a very few people literally on earth who can maybe say to Pete with a straight face, I'm better at center field than you. Is that okay? I mean, is that
absolutely okay. Yeah, I'd expect him to say that, you know?
But the only reason I bring that up is that Spencer, when you are at Vanderbilt, at no point you're like, man, I wish we had Pete in center.
Pete would have caught it.
Pete would have caught that one, you know? Right. So you didn't have to worry about that. But at the same time, as you start your pro career, Spencer's at Vanderbilt, right?
Yeah.
I mean, was there any amount, I'm curious for you, we've talked about this for you a little bit, is there any ounce, of course, where you're like, oh, what would that have been like? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially after like, seeing how quickly like the first season went for me, like just in terms of where I was at, like 2 months in one spot and then the rest of the year, like that was pretty quick transition, it felt like, for me. And seeing how for some reason that opened my eyes to just like the thought of, dang, it would have been really cool to see Rob Hassel, myself, and Enrique in the outfield together.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And, like, Volpe at short.
Oh, right. My God.
I mean, played outfield at those three.
You'd still be pitching.
First base.
You'd still be pitching. No, you make a really good point, right? Because, like, when you're in the minors, like, your first 3 months, I'm sure that's a really bizarre, alienating, lonely experience, especially for someone who gets traded right away. Like, that's so weird, right? Whereas for you, on campus, your fall, so much of the energy is about making sure you feel at home, right? That you are around people and you care about one another, and then you play baseball. Mm-hmm. And so I can imagine why you were kind of looking at the people who decided to go to school and you're like, that looks kind of nice.
Yeah, and I had friends from high school that weren't athletes, you know, that were also starting off in college. And that was interesting to see, but that was just something that, you know, I was prepared to go through. It was just definitely eye-opening, you know? Yeah, I was close with a lot of people at Vandy, and it was.
Go ahead.
We'll get him out to Nashville this offseason.
Yeah.
And he'll train at Vanderbilt for a little bit.
Gotcha.
Nice. Well, I'm curious the kind of the reverse of that for you, Spencer. Like, do you ever think about, had you not gone, had you signed out of high school? And I don't know how realistic that was for any reason, but like, do you think you would have been ready to go in and be a professional baseball player at 19? Because you certainly probably could have had the opportunity.
There was an opportunity for me to do that at high school, but it would have been in like a two-way role. So I would have been pitching and hitting. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, like knowing what I had gone through at Vanderbilt, I was not prepared for that at high school.
On the field and off the field? And
off the field, yeah. Like everything as far as just like life, expectations, who I was, like what I was doing. Like I wasn't ready to handle professional baseball at 18, 19 years old.
Yeah. When I interviewed you a couple months ago, there were two things you said that really stuck with me. And one was you were super honest about how, like, you know, the scene in Miracle, the hockey movie, where he's like, you don't have enough talent to win on talent alone. Mm-hmm. Like you did in high school. Like you were able to get by on talent. And it wasn't, I remember you said this, like it wasn't until you got TJ where you're like, okay, like I can be really good at this. And if I want to be really good at this, I have to work. And I could imagine how if you had gotten into pro ball, you could have gotten your doors blown off right away and it could have gone a completely different direction, right?
Right. Yeah, I like to joke that I'd still be pitching if I was in pro ball at high school.
And you hate that.
Yeah, I don't want to pitch.
Now, Pete, what was your pitching experience in high school? Because I know you did pretty decent arm.
Yeah.
So what did that look like? Give me the Pete on the mound scouting report.
You know, I'd have my days where I was just dialed in, and then my days where I just couldn't locate anything. You know, and
what is dialed in? I mean, is so it just you can throw hard? We know that part. But
well,
like,
yeah, I threw a fastball, a changeup, and a slider. And that was it.
Those are pitches. Yep.
That's right. That's still three pitches.
You know, I was up to 90 my sophomore year. Like the last bullpen I threw.
On the mound. Is that the last time you... So you weren't really getting on the mound ever after that?
No, I pitched in the fall and the winter of my freshman year, going into my freshman year. Hurt my arm. Had like tendonitis or something like minor. And so I didn't pitch. And then tried it again. And then I was like, I don't like this. Like this.
I don't like this
at all. It's too much. It's too much.
You know, Spencer's like, yeah.
It's too much, but like it's not enough at the same time.
I stress enough about hitting though. So it's like... I don't need anything extra on my plate. You know, it didn't take my mind off of
Can you imagine being a high school baseball coach and there's just this guy through his 90s sitting around and is like, I'm good.
Yeah. But, well, no. But I guess in Pete's case, he was good enough at the other stuff that they weren't going to get mad at him.
So
I trusted the process.
I don't know if we asked. That's great. I don't know if we asked you this question when we had you on in the offseason, Pete, but we really like to ask guys what they suck at. Yeah. Like a thing in life that they really struggle at, whether it's on like sports related stuff or like Dylan Carlson said he can't open grocery store bags, like produce bags with his fingers. You know what I'm talking about? Like he really struggled at that. So I'm curious, like, what do you guys suck at in life? What's something that does not come naturally to you?
First person shooter games. I can't game to save my life. Like it's so frustrating too because I want to play with my friends and I can't. Yeah.
Like, so what do you do? Like if everyone's playing,
but do you fake it, or like do you just get on a squad that can carry you and just try to have a good time?
That's usually what happens.
Or does it make you angry to play and suck?
Well, that's like the flip side. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. But recently we got a Nintendo Switch in our apartment in Kodak in Tennessee, and we've been playing a lot of Smash, of Super Smash, Mario Kart, and then we just got into Nintendo Golf, like Mario Golf.
Okay,
and that has consumed most of our post game nights.
Dude. Have that on the Switch?
Oh yeah.
So apparently it's hard to find though. Like it was just like a lucky discovery, I guess.
Hard to find.
The Switch is an incredible.
That's funny. We just bought a Wii like.
An OG Wii.
We have like Wii Golf.
Oh man, like so we're going Wii Sports. Like we're doing the original Wii Sports. Do you ever play baseball? You ever do the Home Run Derby?
No one plays me in baseball.
What?
Wii Sports.
But will you play?
I'm too good.
You're too you're too good at Wii Baseball?
Yeah.
So Wii Baseball, when you play Wii Baseball the original, the pitches that they're throwing in that game as you level up literally is like what Yoan Duran is throwing, but they were doing it, you know, 15 years ago. Like it's like 100 mile an hour splitters and like these pitches, like sidearm, like physically impossible pitches, like sidearm splitters. That should not be possible if you're throwing from that angle.
When you talk about how you're bad at video games, it makes me think of my relationship with golf, where I hate it and I'm not good at it, but like I'll go caddy with my friends.
Yeah.
Like I'll ride in the cart and carry a bag of clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I understand. Like, it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me that baseball players love to just golf. Like it's easy to go hang out. Like great. Outside, whatever. But if I sucked at it, it would be miserable. Yeah. It just seems like a terrible time. Where are you guys at on the is golf fun or not spectrum?
It's funny. My dad works for Titleist.
Okay.
And he doesn't golf. I don't golf. I went out and we went golfing this
fake
off season.
Fan.
And there's a clip on MLB posted a clip of me golfing. They had us all mic'd up.
Oh no! Wait, was this at Topgolf or just
no? This is it. This is like something our
They went and played 18.
You went and played 18. Okay, and you
and I learned on like hole 7 that I'm better at swinging right-handed than I am left-handed.
Oh, that's so brutal. That's so brutal.
Yeah, I have like a good set of clubs, but they're just sitting. They're just sitting in the apartment for now. Oh, I just show them off to my picture buddies.
Can you? What a combo, right? Dad works at Titleist from Southern California. Professional baseball player
sucks at golf.
Sucks at golf.
Amazing.
Wow.
It's a modern miracle in the opposite direction. Pete, what about you?
My golf game has gotten steadily better. Like it's been a very solid progression. Yeah, I can hang
more than in the video games.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. It's not even close, actually. Like I'm horrendous at like first person shooters. Yeah. I could play other video games. Like I was even decent at Fortnite. Like but like Call of Duty
can't do it.
Could never do it. Like the last it was Halo, even a first person shooter.
Yeah.
So that's like the last one I played, and that was back when I had like my 360 in 2013 or whatever it was, you know.
That's impressive, Pete, because usually liberals like we're bad at golf. So that's pretty
that's what they say.
It's pretty dope that you can hit the links.
Well, I've embraced how absolutely fucking hard golf is.
And but that's also why athletes love it, right? Yeah,
but
clearly.
Actually though, on a somewhat serious note, like battling each shot you take is so hard, but it's so fulfilling when you do something well.
That part makes sense to me.
And I think that now that I've seen like how bad it can be and how good it can be, like it'd be really cool to be really good at golf.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a cool sport
true.
To be good at.
That's true. And it does obviously have a lot of cachet
much cooler than ping pong.
Real sport that we that we cover.
Okay, so here's my next question for you. You're both ball fans. Like you guys are not just players, like you think about baseball a pretty decent amount. What's your first MLB memory? When you look back to your childhood and you think, oh, I remember watching that guy face this guy on TV or that moment, what kind of pops up in your brain, Spencer?
That's funny. Right off the top of my head, it was, you know, going to Petco Park when I was a little kid and Kevin Kuzmanoff was the third baseman. And when he walked up to the plate, everyone would yell, Kuz.
Kuz.
The whole stadium. And I asked my dad, why is everyone booing?
Why is everyone booing him? Like, he's great. He's Kevin Kuzmanoff.
Yeah.
So get with it.
That's like my first like.
That's incredible. We had Marcelo Meyer in here earlier, relaying similar, you know, early Padres memories. He's like the OG Will Myers and Jed Jerko. I'm like, yeesh.
What a franchise, bro.
I'm like, at least say Adrian Gonzalez
or like Orlando Hudson.
Yeah,
or something.
Oh my god, you associate with the Padres. That's incredible. Okay, so
that's how I know who Orlando Hudson even is.
What about you, Pete? It's tough to top Kevin Kuzmanoff, but let's hear it.
Yeah, every day for like a stretch there, from like when I was like 3 years old to however old, I'd watch the Kerry Wood 20 strikeout game like on loop every morning, apparently.
And
the whole game?
Yeah. Like my dad would throw it on the TV and I'd
like a DVD
like
of it.
Like it's a new game every day.
Both
he keeps telling you like, no, this is a different one.
Yeah, this looks like yesterday. No.
He did it again.
I think it was my choice, though, is what they made
you
it sound
to keep watching
like.
It.
Like, put it on.
Yeah, so, yeah, right. So
the top and the bottom of the inning? Like, you watched the Cubs face the
I don't remember that well, but.
Well, and this is important for those who don't know. I mean, Pete, you grew up a Cubs fan. Yeah. Dad, you know, from Chicago and everything. So,
sick story.
Heartwarming stuff.
You can read about it in the Chicago Sun-Times.
But here's the thing. That detail is great and so specific too.
Yeah.
Because I've watched that Kerry Wood game many times as well. So that's a good one to kind of roll back.
It's either that or running out like as one of those Dodger kids and getting Garcia Parra Nomar's autograph.
Nice. Yeah, sweet. What World Series do you like remember watching first? Because I think for me it's probably I remember 2000, I remember 2001.
2002. For me it's 2002. Giants Angels, but
the first one I remember was 2008.
Okay,
Phillies.
Yeah, Phillies Yankees.
Yep,
and then
it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, that was the first one I remember, like being invested.
Right, like caring about it.
Right.
Pete, do you have a?
No, I'm trying to think. Probably
he's
it wasn't
like, he's
that.
Like, I only watched the Cubs. Watched the Cubs.
It was. I mean, you've told that story 2016.
My dad's
course,
like,
dad's
like, you want to put the World Series on? No, Kerry Wood, run it back.
basically, yes.
basically.
Pete's like in the dugout watching film in double A. What are you watching? Is that the pitcher we're facing? No, it's just Gary Wood. So our producer, Brady, you said do your homework.
Brady, really?
Brady, this motherfucker does his homework. And so we show up today at lunch and he's like, all right, I got a background sheet on like all the guys, whatever. Like Spencer Jones has a brother who's in a band. What's the band's name?
Mega Mango.
Mega Mango?
Yeah, Mega Mango.
Can you confirm?
Yeah.
Brady was like,
Mega Mango.
What's the deal with Mega Mango and Fruit Corps?
So they started in 2020, like pre-pandemic. Yeah. They'd just gotten together and they'd released a song. And so what happened was, you know, everything happens. They get shut down. Everybody has to be sent away, right? But they have this song. They release it. Gets like a couple million plays on Spotify.
Whoa. Out the gate.
Whoa.
What a debut.
Like, we made a good song, right? And so after COVID and everything, they, you know, reunite back in Philly. My brother was keeping in touch with them. And, you know, they got the band back together.
And love getting back
after
together.
One song.
Well, they had made an EP.
Okay. Sorry. You made it sound like that was their only song, and then they disbanded and they came back.
Got some good plays.
Got it.
But, like, I mean, they've been doing well. Like, in the past year, they've been on tour, so they're in spring training. They did, like, a full East Coast swing. They're based out of Philly.
Amazing.
So they drove all the way down. They were hitting shows from up in Philly all the way down into Florida.
Okay.
And they did a full West Coast swing, went all the way out to Los Angeles, San Francisco.
Wow.
And then came all the way back. And my brother, like, I think they have another tour coming up at another point in this
You're
year.
You're losing track of the tours. They have so many. This is unbelievable.
I think this will be the third time they'll be going on the road. But the first time I saw
I mean, you're on the road all the time. What's the big deal?
The first time I saw him on the road was like the first week I got back to Nashville after the season was over. And like my brother's tall too. He's like, you know, 6'4", right? He plays the bass, got nice long hair.
Tall for a bassist. Yeah.
Right. Well, I was asking him like, hey, like, how are you guys going from show to show? Like, do you guys have a van? He's like, oh, we got it all packed in the Jetta, right? So they have a full drum kit, you know, in the back seat.
With how many people?
There's four band members, right? And so they
have. Am I thinking of the right car? This doesn't seem possible.
Like it's unbelievable. Yeah, it's like they're playing Tetris after every show.
Oh my.
The Volkswagen Jetta is just like it's like a bigger buggy, right?
It's a sedan.
It's a small car.
They got four homies in the sedan,
In the Jetta, yeah.
Rolling in the Jetta.
But okay. They've since upgraded, right?
Hey.
Okay. They have a bigger vessel now, right? they've been releasing music. Like it's all on Spotify, Apple Music.
Amazing.
Mega Mango Band. Go check them out.
So Mega Mango.
My one question that you might have is what is Fruit Corps though? Like you say that's the genre.
Right. Well, it's like their own little subgenre, right? So it's like indie music, pop music, right? It's stuff that, you know, I don't even know how to describe the sound of it. You know, it's like
guess we'll
like
have to listen.
Pop. You know what I mean?
I love that.
Well, it's mango fruit. Is that related?
Right, but it's a fruit with a pH.
Oh,
so I don't really understand.
Let me say this.
I think it's from Philadelphia. So it's like
That always works in Philly. You throw the pH on top of anything.
I'm listening to Mega Mango.
Now we're locked in.
So, might be what I
actually do have one question off of this for both of you. And then we'll finally excuse you because we just talked to Jonathan Cannon. He talked about how zero musical talent whatsoever. I can certainly relate to that. I don't know. Do you guys have any musical talent, instruments? Maybe not to your brother's level, but Pete, do you have any history?
You
with instruments?
Definitely cannot sing. I can just look at you.
Well.
I look at Pete and the way Pete talks. There's no way you can sing, Pete.
That's crazy.
Okay.
He might be surprised one day. You never know.
That's fine. Know. But what about, let's keep it to the
they're
instruments.
They're going to have him sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley.
Actually, that'd be cool. I would do that for sure.
From the field,
yeah, from
Hell
center
yeah,
field.
Mike, from center field. That'd be sick.
What instruments?
No, like I can thumb the guitar.
Okay,
and I can play like a teeny weeny bit of drums.
Okay,
but that's it.
Spencer,
can you sing though?
Like you're I said, real. You might be surprised one time. It might be the first time you see me sing might be in center field at Wrigley.
Spencer, what about you?
I have zero music.
Zero. Talent. So then, what I asked Jonathan is, if you could pick any instrument to magically be amazing at, what would it be?
Ukulele.
Oh, see, that's a great answer. That's something you could probably figure that out. I think that's something.
Our first base coach with our team, he'll walk in the locker room playing the ukulele. I think it's the funniest thing ever.
In what situation? After a win?
It'll just be like in the morning, right? And we're all getting ready for whatever. Right?
Stay loose,
like,
boys.
It's like the bass running being the best star, right? He comes in plucking the uke.
Somewhere open.
Okay, what about you, Pete?
Bro, a ukulele in your hands would look hilarious.
Are you picking a ukulele?
No, I'm not picking Eagle. Yeah. I'm probably picking like
see, you're
the sitar.
Sitar. Now we're talking. Yes. This is why.
How many futures gamers know what a sitar is?
No, so actually, funny enough, my uncle plays the sitar.
Of course.
My uncle plays like every instrument you could actually think of. That's the only reason I know how to play like a, like
even a little
the smallest
bit
of drums.
But all right.
No, I think the drums I'd actually like, I'd want to be really good at
that. I can picture that. That's believable.
Yeah.
The sitar is.
I have a business idea for your uncle. Sitar hero. All right.
All right. I think we've covered it all. We could keep you here all day, but you guys have other places to be.
Any complaints?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, we like to ask for feedback.
Oh, yeah.
On the show. Like, is there anything we could be doing better? Is there anything like in your life that's like a little sneaky?
How would you do your homework? How would you do your... I'm kidding.
Yeah. We did not prepare enough for this interview.
I actually do because we were texting about this is the France trip or the Spain trip.
So I was in France a month ago.
Yeah,
it was great. Just drank a bunch of wine, biked around, no complaints.
I got some nice pictures.
I sent him some photographs.
Pete, you been to Europe?
No. Spain.
Been to Spain.
That counts.
Briefly.
I have
very briefly.
I got an off-season trip.
Off-season planned already.
We're working on it.
Ooh. Where are we going?
We're in between Spain and Portugal.
Okay.
We're going to do two countries. So either Spain and Portugal or Croatia and Greece.
So I just a little bit of advice. I would avoid Russia right now.
Ooh, okay.
Thanks for that.
There's a lot of other options. I don't know how many places would have to cancel before we get up to Russia.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get you canceled on here or anything, but like I would just avoid
canceled. We're Moscow. Trying to keep him safe. My goodness.
Out of Russian prison.
You know, I don't know if the Yankees are like, what happened to Spencer Jones? Oh, he went to Vladivostok on his
classic mistake. Classic mistake.
Who do you think they would trade me for?
Who? Oh, like in the prisoner swap? That's a good question. So, like,
we really want to know his trade value. Yankees, this is how we find out.
The Yankees could use, they could use some rotation depth, I guess. So they
sure could.
You send Spencer Jones back from Russia. We'll take an arm.
All right.
Send you an arm.
On that note, let's save all of us and end this podcast. Pete Armstrong.
Thanks.
Spencer Jones, Jake Bintz. Thank you all. And we will probably do this again at some point.
Goodbye.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I'm Jordan Schusterman. Now, solo wrapping up this final All-Star Game edition as the T-Mobile Park grounds crew is wrapping up, cleaning up everything going on the field here. Thank you to everyone who listened and supported this show over the past few days as we cranked out some extra episodes. This was super fun. We are, as I mentioned earlier in this episode, very, very, very lucky to get to cover this event. And we do not take it lightly, but we hope that we could kind of share some of that opportunity and that experience with all the listeners. So thank you all for that support. Thank you to Jake Mintz for co-hosting. I know he is currently on a red-eye plane heading home. On Friday, you will hear an episode that we actually recorded earlier today as a special segment kind of previewing the second half. I won't spoil what that exact kind of structure is, but I think you guys are going to enjoy that. But until then, we'll be back next week, day to be determined, hopefully Monday, maybe Wednesday. But either way, you can be sure to rate, review, subscribe, follow, tell your friends about Baseball Barbacast. We want more people to listen to it just because we were having a good time. And we think that more people who love baseball will enjoy it, hopefully as much as we do. So thank you as always to Chris Tyler for producing. Thank you to Daniel Alvarez for joining me. And thank you to Elias Diaz for giving me probably one of my favorite All-Star memories ever. So thanks again to everyone who listened all week. And we will be back on Friday with more Baseball Barbacast.
SiriusXM Podcasts.